온나모 바구테 바스데바야 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 22, Text 47. So 47 doesn't have a purport. We can read it together and then I'll read Text 48 as well.
Nishetagava janmani Balyakumara yovanam Vayamajam jaramityu Itiyavastas tanornava Nishetagava janmani Balyakumara yovanam Vayamajam jaramityo Ityavastas tanonava Nisheka kapa janmani Balyakumara yovanam Vayamajam jaramityo Ityavastas tanonava
Nisheka, impregnation. Garba, gestation. Janmani, and birth. Palya, infancy. Kaumara, childhood. Yovanam, and youth. Vayamadhyam, middle age. Jara, old age. Mirtu, death. Iti, thus. Avastaha, ages. Tano, of the body. Nava, nine. Translation. Impregnation, gestation, birth, infancy, childhood, youth, middle age, old age, and death are the nine ages of the body. We can repeat responsibly. Impregnation, gestation, birth, infancy, childhood, youth, middle age, old age, and death are the nine ages of the body. I'll read text 48.
Eta manoratamai hanyasyocha vachastanu. Guna sangarupadate kvachit kaschit jahaticha.
Although the material body is different from the self, because of the ignorance due to material association, one falsely identifies oneself with the superior and inferior bodily conditions. Sometimes a fortunate person is able to give up such mental concoction. Purport. One who has received the special mercy of the Supreme Lord is able to give up the mental concoction of bodily identification. Thus there is always a chance of escaping the cycle of birth and death.
Om Agyana Timanandasya Agyanangana Salakaya Chakshu Omunitamyena Tasmaya Shri Gurubeya Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovisam Sabitamyena Bhutale Sarambhupa Kadamayam Kudatu Sakaranti Panchakalpa Trivishcha Kripa Sindhubya Evacha Patita Nam Pavnebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Garbheta Garatha Shivasari Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna. So, we're continuing with the discussion, elements of material creation. And here, of course, as Keshava Prabhu was pointing out the other day, that the 11th canto is basically a summary of everything that's been discussed in the previous cantos. So we'll get some jnana, we'll get some sankhya, we'll get explanation about karma, bhakti, pure bhakti, etc. And then here we're back to material creation, or how the gross and subtle material nature come into existence, having Krishna, of course, as the seed giving father of everything and the maintainer, the sustainer of all these material universes and the jivas. So here we're being told the basic understanding of what Bhagavad Gita as well tells us in the opening chapters about the body. The body is just is like a garment that one puts on, and then the next day you take it off, you put on another set of clothes. So the body is created by the material nature, pushed by the modes of nature, and of course it's maintained by our desires, our subtle desires that manifest. So we prepare our next body based on our activities. So if we change our activities then into spiritual activities, we prepare our spiritual body, which is already existing. So we start identifying with our spiritual self instead of identifying ourselves just with the body or matter. So in this little section, Krishna is speaking with Uddhava, giving different examples. In the next chapter, Krishna will give an example of the Avanti Brahmana. And in that certain section, Krishna is teaching about developing certain qualities of a devotee, like tolerance, in which we'll read about it when the time comes. But Krishna will give an entire chapter explaining this Avanti Brahmana, and how he dealt with certain activities that happened to him while in the material sphere. So here, in text 47, we're hearing about the different changes that the body is going through. So these are the 9 changes of the body, starting from the point of impregnation, how the body gets transformed, staying for some time, and then it's born, etc., going through childhood, youth, middle age, old age, and death, which means you're changing one body, you're taking another body. But this is pertaining to matter, and it does not pertain to the spiritual nature, the spiritual spark. As we understand with transmigration of the soul, that the soul is traveling, is on its spiritual evolution, or in some cases, devolution of the soul as it glides down to the lower species, and how it's gradually changing bodies based on our desires, based on our previous desires. In the next few purports, there's examples that are given about how we actually still do not understand this point, although it is very obvious to the eye. So just as we have friends, family, sons and daughters, if we're married, we have our spouse or a partner, and we can gradually see how their bodies are going through different changes as well. So sometimes it's hard to see it on ourselves, because we might be still in our youth, we might still be middle-aged, and it's hard for us to perceive that we will go through these 9 changes, 9 states of body changes that's been mentioned in this text. So by seeing our family, our friends, our loved ones, they are going through all these different stages of transformation. And we can be an observer, we can see that, but at the same time, this ignorance, this curtain of illusion still stops us from thinking that it will happen to us as well. It's just a matter of time. So time is separating our old age. Time is separating us from death, from middle age, from gradually progressing when we're young, to childhood, puberty, etc. So the only thing that's really standing in the way is time. But it will happen eventually. We're all going to grow old. And sorry to say, the body will go through different changes. But of course, a devotee, one who understands the nature of this body, the one who understands the nature of the soul, does not lament about these different changes. Because they're coming and going naturally, that is matter. It has to go through these different changes. And no one can argue with that. That's how it's designed. That's how it's supposed to come out. But however, although we have all these nine bodily changes, and in the previous verses and chapters, we were speaking how it might look a bit difficult to actually get out of this bodily conception, because it's something that we've been doing for a very, very long time, since time immemorial, meaning we can't really trace back the millions and trillions of lifetimes we've been identifying with the body, different types of bodies. But still, the body just means matter, something that's temporary. So we're identifying with something that we're not. So this has been properly constituted in our consciousness, that we are matter, and we will try to enjoy matter, whether we're thinking, we're the senses, we're the body, we're our mind, or we're intelligence. But however, in the next purport, it's explaining how there's actually a chance of escaping this cycle of birth and death, this chance of escaping the samsara, or this cycle, this never-ending cycle in the material sphere of taking one birth after the other and going through all these nine changes once again, over and over again. And it's explaining how taking shelter later on in the next verse is taking shelter of such knowledge and taking shelter of those who've realized the knowledge, we can actually extricate ourselves from this cycle of birth and death. We can extricate, we can allow the soul to not become an observer of all these different changes of the body. So in the translation to text 53, the Prabhupada is speaking about imitation, that the living entity is trying to imitate different activities. So we're in one body and we're trying to imitate the activities of something else. So here, there's a very funny purport. Says here, people sing songs heard on the radio and imitate dances and dramatic performances seen on television or in movies and theaters, entering into the emotions and art of the performer. The conditioned soul is similarly captivated by the concoctions of the material mind and intelligence, which convince him that he can become the enjoyer of the material world. So we're classic imitators, trying to enjoy the material world. So it's like we become induced, we become forced to act in such a way. We're seeing the glitz and the glamour, and we're thinking, oh, this is something that belongs to me, this is something that I can gel with. But ultimately, as we know, in the material world, we're driven by a lot of passion, and we're driven by, of course, the predominating most passion and ignorance. So we fail to see how much we're imitating. So we fail to see that we're actually illicitly trying to enjoy matter. And we think that it's normal, it's something that us, or the self, in this case, people take the self to be the mind or the intelligence or the senses. We fail to see how that is actually not our real constitution. So when we're driven by our material intelligence, which is supposed to grab a hold of the mind and situate the mind in the mode of goodness, then we can't actually perceive all these different points that are mentioned anywhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam. if we're still functioning on a material intelligence, it basically means our mind is being pushed here and there to enjoy the senses. Because material intelligence is just after fulfilling one's desires, material desires. Because everything material suffering is just all in the mind. I was listening to this lecture the other day, explaining how the conditioned soul thinks that he's enjoying, but all his enjoyment and suffering culminates in his mental activities. So although sometimes we cannot fully enjoy, we try and get that enjoyment through mental concoction. So mentally concocting that we're the body, convincing ourselves through the mind that we're something that we're not. And this gives rise to anxiety, this gives rise to great suffering for the conditioned soul. And the suffering is seen as normal. And depending on the different grades of suffering or the different levels of suffering, sometimes this suffering is seen as enjoyment or happiness. So people out there are striving for happiness, but they do not know that if we're striving for happiness, we have to be at least in a peaceful state, in a peaceful situation. And for happiness to actually come about, we have to know who the real self is. And how can you be happy if you don't know your proper identity, if you don't have your proper blueprint of who you are, exactly telling you your qualities, your character, and what activities you should be engaged in. So in the Madhya Lila, so in the Adi Lila, chapter 4, text 102, there's an explanation. Actually, before that, in the very first chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the chapter explaining the spiritual master, there's some verses that are explaining the descent of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and how Krishna expands himself to come as the spiritual master. And their role, of course, there's a nice analogy that is used, that Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, they are like the sun and the moon, and they have arisen to dispel the darkness born of the age of Kali Yuga. And this darkness of ignorance is classified into four different types, which we'll discuss, because this is what exactly stops us from identifying as spirit soul. And this is what helps us identify as the body, thinking that I am matter, I'm temporary, I'm meant to enjoy now, I'm the center. Everything should be dovetailed towards my enjoyment. So the first point that Srila Prabhupada mentions, that the five different types of avidya or ignorance, is accepting the body to be the self. That's the biggest ignorance, number one. You accept the body to be the real self. But at the same time, we're being shown how just temporary that body is, and we get to see how that's not the real self, because when death comes, that body is still there, but the real self is gone. So when we're firmly convinced that the body is the self, then we deny the fact that there's any kind of rules and regulations, because if we're all accepting this is my body, I know what my body wants, and that's your body, you know what your body wants, so you can make your own plans, you can have your own rules and regulations, and someone will come and they'll have their own sets and rules of regulation, etc., etc. So in that way, everyone boxes themselves in their own little universe, and they have their own motto in life, they have their own goals in life, they have their understanding about what the goal of life is, because everyone is thinking that I'm the body, and no one knows what the body is good for besides me. No one can tell me what my body is like, no one can tell me what I feel like. So I do not accept any authority. And in this way, this is why people who are very firmly stuck on the bodily platform cannot accept anything higher, they cannot accept any authority. because they see themselves as the authority of their own body. They see themselves as the masters of their own body. So whether it's just the body, the senses, their mind, their intelligence, they continue to speculate and concoct ideas about who they think they are in relation to this world's gigantic egg. And from that, the second point that's been made in that purport is that this avidya, this ignorance, makes one think that sense gratification is your number one standard of enjoyment, that there's nothing else beyond satisfaction of the senses. There is nothing else that's meant to be done in life apart from satisfying your senses. So this is by any means necessary. You try and gratify your senses, whether gross or subtle. And the more you do that, the more you get praised. Follow your dreams. You know, when people are young, they get told by their parents or by their friends, you can do it, just go for it, just put your heart into it. So it basically means, you know, your hormones are pushing you, your emotions are pushing you, just go for it. That's good. Follow the emotions. What else do you know? So when we put that as our standard of enjoyment, then this leads, of course, to great suffering. Because when we follow the lead of the venomous serpents of the senses, then time and time again we get reminded of how these serpents are actually nothing but poison. So normally there was a nice analogy the few text backs explaining how certain parts of the Vedas are like, what's that analogy? I think that's in the Bhagavad Gita. We're discussing it back to Shastri. The analogy explaining how certain sections of the Vedas are compared to the poisonous fruits or flowers of a tree. So if you go outside, you go to the botanical gardens, you know, the trees are beautiful, the flowers are budding, you know, you want to pick one, but they're actually poisonous. So everything externally looks really good, everything is pretty, but they're actually poisonous. So we have this package of the material body, we get attached to the senses, but that attachment leads us to gliding down into, you know, the material whirlpool. So when we make the sense gratification our number one standard of enjoyment, then we start thinking, of course, on the body platform, I and mine. It's the false ego thinking that I'm going to satisfy my senses, whatever is good for my skin, whatever is good for my sensation, whatever is good for my hearing, my nose, etc. Which basically means you'll be stuck on the bodily platform. And you'll try and satisfy those senses by any means necessary. Because there's no boundaries. Because you're an individual. Who should stipulate what you should do, what you shouldn't do? I'm my own person. I'm driven by my own emotions, by my hormones. No one has the same hormones as me, so I'm going to do my own thing. And no one can enforce it. So like this, we push ourselves down into this type of ignorance when we start making sense gratification our main focus in life, our main standard of enjoyment. And when this is in excess, or when this is not even in excess, we get into a lot of anxiety, because the sense gratification has never led to anyone's happiness. Sense gratification has never led to anyone's enlightenment. It has never led to anyone's understanding of the real self. All it leads to is constant anxiety, constant mental concoctions about who we are and what our goal in life is. And the fourth point is this one of lamentation. This is when you see when we're covered by ignorance, when we don't know situations, if we don't know what we're actually doing in life, we start lamenting. Oh, I don't have this, oh, I wish I could have had that. oh, why don't I have this situation, this person has this, that's just ignorance. Because we want certain things pertaining to our situation, pertaining to how we want our body to be comfortable, pertaining to how we want our mind to be at ease. We start lamenting, oh, I wish I had this, I want to have that. And once again, that's putting ourselves first, not taking into account any kind of authority. And when this happens, of course, we don't think there's anything beyond ourselves. We don't think there's anything, we don't think there's any authority. We don't accept any authority. We don't accept Krishna. And oftentimes, sometimes when we're practicing, we can also lament about not having certain situations. Or this devotee gets to travel all the time. That's not fair. Or this devotee has a flat in Mayapur. They can go for Gaur Purnima whatever they want. Why is Krishna doing this? Or this devotee stays at MVT when they go to Mayapur, and when they go to Vrindavan, and then I stay at some kutir, something, something, and they don't have hot water. This is just, you know. So we lament about so many things that are just not necessary, even in our devotional service. So we're trying to understand these, how ignorance further puts us on a bodily platform. We start to understand our thought patterns, we start to understand our pattern life after life, what we've been doing to actually substantiate this concoction. So it doesn't only mean we're on a human platform, but even in the animal species, you know, they portray all these different things. We're all eating, sleeping, baiting and defending to varying degrees. Even the animals, they also lament. Animals also lament. You know, they don't have enough puppies, or they don't have enough this and that, or this dog has marked its territory. You can see sometimes animals just get depressed and they lament. It's very interesting. They also have a mind, they also have an intelligence. So this lamenting factor is there for one who's identifying with the body. This acceptance of the body to be the self is there. You can see it in the animal species as well. You can see it in the game parts. You see elephants and different animals, springboks and gemsbok, all these different animals. And as soon as they walk, and especially if they have horns, or they have their defense mechanisms, or if they have huge, big bodies, they walk into an area, and you can just see how, you know, there's a certain way they walk in. You know, the gemsbok or the antelope, it stands there with its beautiful horns, and it has a nice shimmering color. This is me. This is my body. You see that with animal species. It's very interesting. They have an attitude. And then they start doing the fighting thing, showing off their fighting skills. You know, these are my horns. They're going to poke you, etc. So this is there. And their standard of enjoyment is the simple thing of just eating, sleeping, mating and defending. And they'll do it however they want to do it. Whenever they want to do it. You see herds moving together, sometimes one steals the female from another herd, etc., etc. Anything for their sense enjoyment. So this is all happening all the time. But in that same context, in the Adi Leela, it's explaining that to actually free ourselves from this ignorance, one has to take shelter of Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya. Because they actually dissipate all this ignorance by taking shelter of the instructions, by taking shelter of, you know, the person Bhagavat and the book Bhagavat, then we can actually remove this avidya, this ignorance. And therefore, this is why we need constant engagement. This is why we have a process. This is why we have the bhakti process. To engage us in such a way that we start understanding, okay, the body is going to go through different stages of change. That's fine, that's pertaining to the body, but how do you make yourself sober enough not to get bewildered and think that the soul is also changing? Or to think that, well, the soul and the body are one, let's equate them together. We get stuck on the body platform. But we get given a process, the bhakti process, to help us understand the body and the soul is separate. Matter and spirit are separate. And they have to be, however, they have to be used together to try and understand the relationship between themselves and to understand the relationship with Krishna, who is the source of both. So it's not that we're trying to understand one aspect of the equation or two aspects of the equation, but we're trying to understand matter, spirit, and the source of both. So that's the full equation. If we do not do this, we'll still be in ignorance of our real identity. So by taking shelter of Lord Chaitanya through this process of bhakti, Harinam Sankirtan Yajna that he's given, we get to be engaging the body, engaging the senses in devotional service. And it's very interesting, there's another nice analogy that's being used, how the senses or the tongue are compared to a desert, and a desert needs constant supply of water. And similarly, the devotees are likened to the Ganges River, that they are constantly overflowing with Krishna Katha, whereas you may have your different poets, philanthropic people, humanitarians, utilitarians, etc. Srila Prabhupada is explaining in the purport that they are just, these types of activities are but just mere drops of water on the desert. It's insignificant. But the devotees are always hearing pure topics about Krishna, and therefore their tongues are being compared to the flowing Ganges River, the pure water of the Ganges, and in that way they purify their existence. They purify this mental concoction of thinking that they are the body, where they're actually not. So we have all these rules and regulations in bhaktis, and sometimes we might think, you know, why do I need to do all this? Why do I need to rise early? Why do I need to do any service? Why should I be worshipping the deity? Why should I sit in class? It says that by hearing Bhagavatam, one becomes self-realized. You know, I've read the Bhagavatam, what, 5 times? Some people may say, but I'm still not self-realized, so what's the point? Sometimes we may think like this in devotional service, or we can have the why me mentality. I'm doing so much and nothing's happening. What's wrong with me? So we have to develop unflinching faith in the process of devotional service. And to have faith in a process or to have faith in someone means that there has to be a very firm level of trust. Meaning that whatever you know, whatever happens, however long it takes to happen, I'm still going to sincerely and with great enthusiasm carry on this process of trying to understand who I am and who Krishna is. With faith, trust has to develop as well. It's not that you just do something blindly, but you're understanding that you're performing this service, you're doing this service, and the reciprocation may come at any point. It's not up to us. This process of bhakti has one person called Krishna who reciprocates as we surrender. So we have the desire of the sincere living entity, and we have the reciprocation of Krishna. And when we really want to get Krishna's attention, this example that His Holiness Devamrita Maharaj was giving about how Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was preparing prasadam for Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya was very impressed as to the quantity and to the amount of how much prasadam was being produced by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, this one person. So the Lord is impressed when He sees the great depth of our devotion, of our bhakti. So this can be a lesson for us, that we try and act in such a way that, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati would say, we try and act in such a way that Krishna will look at us, because we're trying to attract Krishna. And through thick and thin, whatever happens on the path to bhakti, we're still Krishna's servants. Whatever ups and downs that may come, we're still Krishna's servants. If times are good, we're still serving Krishna. If the mind is giving us a hard time, if the modes are giving us a hard time, if other living entities are giving us a hard time, we're still servants of Krishna. And all imports of the Vedas, of course, they're meant to bring us to the point. Everything that we do, all the rules and regulations, they are meant to remind us of Krishna all the time. Always remember Krishna and never forget Him. This is why we're practicing bhakti. We want to remember Krishna. We never want to be in a forgetful state. We want to be Krishna conscious. So this is why we're trying to understand these different elements. This is why we're trying to understand this verse, these different verses in the Bhagavad Gita, like the Hinosmanyata Dehe. This is how we're trying to understand what the false ego has done to us. We're trying to understand how this change of body and acceptance of the material body has contaminated our consciousness. So we're trying to understand all these things. We're following the nine processes of devotional service as a way to remind ourselves of Krishna and to never be the forgetful state of Krishna. So I'll stop there and I'll ask if there's any comments or questions. Staying enthusiastic. He was saying, I was speaking about how even as devotees sometimes we lament in our service, we're thinking, or like he was saying in doing big distribution, sometimes people don't stop. People just don't smile at you, and or you don't do a book in 7 hours, and you start thinking, you know, what am I doing? So how do we keep up that enthusiasm in our devotional service? And I can recall a few conversations I've had with a few devotees, my spiritual master, and just reading Srila Prabhupada's instructions, Shikshamrita, that Prabhupada would always tell the devotees that the service that you are doing, or the service that gets given to you by your authority or your guru, etc., these are services that, you know, Krishna personally wants you to do. So we take it seriously, and in terms of the reciprocation we may get or the reciprocation that we may not get, especially if you're doing outreach, we shouldn't try and be attached to the results. That we sincerely endeavor and Krishna will do the rest. And we should always, one thing I got told is that we should always be thankful and grateful that we have an opportunity to distribute Srila Prabhupada's mercy. Even if it's to one person, even if it's to two people or 20 people or etc. But each and every book that goes out, you know, Srila Prabhupada is up in arms, Prabhupada is in ecstasy. So a nice way to always keep us motivated is if we read Prabhupada's Lilamritam, and if we read how Prabhupada in the beginning himself struggled so much, even just to sell magazines. He would print them and personally go himself to distribute these magazines. And sometimes people wouldn't take. And this is Srila Prabhupada. You know, no contamination of the modes whatsoever. And sometimes still people did not take. But he just kept on doing it as service to Guru and Gauranga, knowing that whatever little efforts you're performing, Krishna takes notice. Krishna never forgets what you're doing. So when we have that firm understanding, if through reading the books we understand Prabhupada's message as this, through thick and thin, you're Krishna's servant. And Krishna will never, Krishna has never rejected any devotee. Krishna is maintaining the dog and the hog in the street, who's not personally offering him RT or anything like that. And his devotee is sincerely trying to expand the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, Krishna is always taking care of that devotee. So sometimes we might lament and think, oh, my devotional service is worth nothing, or I only did one book or two books. But we should just continue in our service and not be attached to the results. We offer whatever we have, we just humbly offer it to Krishna and Srila Prabhupada. And our enthusiasm will come with the understanding that I'm a servant of Krishna. Through thick and thin, no matter what happens, I'm still a servant of Krishna. And Krishna, you can make me broken-hearted by not sending enough conditioned souls to take a book from me. Krishna, you can make me broken-hearted if you decide not to make me a book distributor, a good one. You can make me broken-hearted, Krishna, by making me do menial service, washing pots. But it doesn't matter, I'm still your servant. And the ornament of a devotee, the one quality that will always attract Krishna is this humility. Seeing ourselves just as servants and expecting nothing in return. So if we cultivate the right mood of just being a servant, and devotional service is so fun. You know, outreach is so fun. Distributing books or preaching. Even sometimes people say funny things, we're just thinking, anyway, he's under the bows, I'm going to continue. But we must protect ourselves in the sense that we should be well acquainted with Prabhupada's instructions through his books. And then we'll imbibe his mood through thick and thin. We'll imbibe Srila Prabhupada's mood. And by understanding Srila Prabhupada's desire, that's enough to give us enthusiasm. It's enough to give us enthusiasm. So if we keep our good sadhana, our good attentive chanting, then we're able to withstand anything out there. And the enthusiasm will come as we become more conversant with Srila Prabhupada's desire, the desire of the Guru. And with that, no matter who says what or what happens, we're still serving Krishna. We still continue. Does that help? Yeah, just try to have fun and just try and meditate and say, Krishna is so kind, he's engaged someone like me in his service. Mahatma Prabhu.
The human heart tells us avidya, five times. We want to enlighten.
The only five times of avidya I've been studying is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The ones that I mentioned, that we accept the body to be the self, we make sense gratification our standard of enjoyment, anxiety, that's a form of ignorance, lamentation, and thinking that there's nothing beyond Krishna, thinking that Krishna is not the supreme absolute truth, that is ignorance. So you can read about it. It's in the Adi Lila, chapter 4, text 102. These points Prabhupada has made. Okay. Gantaraji Mad Bhagavatam Ki. Shila Prabhupada Ki. Jai Nitai Gokumanandini.